Well, almost everybody here, our guys are far apart too, we don't even know what watch is. But everybody know what watch is. I guess they do know what watch is. Well, I told the lady that one was up there, I was gonna call it the rising fall watch. But it isn't what we do. Well, the reason I thought I'd do it that way was because watch is much larger. I had more things going on a long time ago, in 1800s, than it does now. And the first thing I'll mention was Joe Gale, according to the Avenging Book, was lived at the bottom of Gale Peak in about 1840, just about 1842. And so we wondered if he had the mill that was there at that time. But now between that time and 1908, when the Frost family came, why many changes had come about, that's Joe Gale is it. But when we came in 1908, why at Watts there was a church, evangelical church, and a schoolhouse, and the Rockefeller Hall, which was across the bridge, and which at one time had been a grocery store, but with a Rockefeller Hall, and then the remnants of the grist mill, and the big buildings there that had been the grist mill, and also the there had been several mills or lumber mills. And the reason that they had been there was because they had a water pot. Now somebody built the mill race there. Henry Bush remembers where they had sort of dammed the Gale Creek above. But they had it must have been by horses and teams, and there are remnants of the mill race still there. They had taken a place further up Gale Street, almost where Lincoln Waters is, and then they had, where did you go there, Henry?
Well, yeah.
Closer to Watts than that, I guess.
Closer to Watts than that, it'd be up the corner, but
yeah, well, and they came straight with the mill race, which went right through where the house weed is, and then there was a waste race that connected back over in one spot to Gale Street. And that's where they had the power for these various projects, the mills of various kinds. And then in 1906, Haynes had and made the electricity for Fort Sylvia. So a lot had a lot of things at the time. They had all of these things. Now that by the time in 1908, the mill race, the old buildings had been discontinued, but there were still big beams across there. And I can remember well that we played on the beams across the mill race, because I live right on the mill race, on the home there. And I think that Henry Bush remembers that too, even how the wheel had gone. And now everybody has stopped over the years trying to find the millstone, and they've been part of a month of course. And we didn't know where they were, but I was talking to Mr. Smith, and I understand that he dug up some stones here in town that they told him had been the stones from the mill out of Watts, and they had taken them away and used them at a mill in Forest Grove. Have I said that correctly?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And so maybe these mill stones are still available if somebody can help locate.
Wasn't there one out in Biscuit School?
I don't know whether it was or not, because I've never been told if there was. And I would have thought that there would be the name for one customer. I didn't know there was a milk phone out there. Well, I was surprised to find that the electric power out there too. I mean, it's just too bad that we don't know who built the mill. Nobody mentioned it, but on all the deeds and so forth, that's the corner that, like the spot that they all, they measure from all the time. And, now Mr. Bamford, who is here, and I was going down to Watts to this mill, and he was about 4 years old, he and his sister and his father. Was it oats you took to be ground? Did you say? They took oats to be ground and made a picnic of it and spent the day waited while the oats were ground and then before they went back home up on the hillside. And it was just about a day's trip, wasn't it? The time you waited and so forth.
We took our lunch and made a picnic for it.
So I thought that was very interesting. The church was an evangelical church and by the time 1908 came, they didn't have any a minister, all was from that church there, but they did have people that came and went, and Mrs. Bert Dawn and my mother had Sunday school there lots of times, even when they didn't have the church. It was a good place for meeting, and people were happy to go to church on Sunday at Watts. And I know that my sister used to go, and my brothers and sisters, and I was too little to remember, but she kind of liked to sit by some certain fellow and everything, and what was his name? I'm trying to think what his name was now. Anyway, by the Wilson Ball. What was his name? Was there any Wilson that was right around the door too?
Well, that was true, of course. Richard was the oldest one.
Yeah, Richard Wilson. Yeah. Evidently, he was a real handsome guy, and this was kind of stuck on him. And he was kind of a wild one, though. I've forgotten how he changed one of those hymns that he sang. he had a dog named Nero. Instead of saying, Nero, my God, he said, Nero, my dog, yes, please. And it wasn't probably very nice, but I had to kind of step hard in. Now by the time we had gotten there in I was born on the Luther Place in 1908. The folks moved back to Watts in 1910. And by that time the old building, the old schoolhouse was in bad repair. So you know that the rebuilding between 1840s and 1910, it just seemed like that must have been a small amount of years, but it wasn't, because the one building had been already, too bad to be used anymore. Oh, I thought it was a picture, but I think it's small over here. I've got mine here too. Well, this was the old building. This was the one that they renewed in 1911. And, Henry Bush is here, and my father was the teacher. It seems like Miss Traver had started that year teaching. My father was working for Mr. Buxton on the hill, and he wasn't teaching when we first came. But Miss Traver's mother was being ill, and so she couldn't finish the year, so my father was teaching there. And most all the people are Bushes, Frost, and I guess there are some others there too, but there's quite a number. Cricket and the Cricket Girls and lots of Dillies. There were lots of Dillies too. But I'll leave these picture bills. We'll look at those pictures later. The second building is a fine school, and it still remains there, and that's what we use for our community club. And the people of Watts were not backward at all. The school in Watts had things that you're coming back to now. The building had, if it was a two-room school with doors that slid back and forth, you could have combined studying, or you could have one room at a time. And it was a very good school. We had very good teachers, we needed to revisit, and I still think that it was a bad idea when we changed. We should have done so. When they built this last school, which is the first building, the first building was log, I understand, and the second building was this one. Then in 1911, they built the new one, which we now have for a community hall. So they moved this school off to one side. So then we had the church and the school and the community hall all across in this one little area. And that community hall was really something. Everything went on in the community hall. We had dances, we had the literary society. I lost track here, I put down notes, but I go ahead of here all this time. I skipped Rockefeller Hall, which was across the creek where they had many things, and I do have a poem that was written at one time for a basket school show at Rockefeller Hall, when they funded books for the school. But then when we turned over to the other community hall, let's see, I'll find out what all the things that we had. We had the literary society. And people didn't take these things as very lightly. Because the literary society meant they had very good programs, they had debates, and the people of Watt, like I say, just because it was a small community, there was nothing done about them. They were mostly well-educated, the older girls all had gone to college, and we weren't a bunch of country hicks like people might like us to believe just because we didn't come from town. Anybody who wanted an education got it. You didn't have any school buses, but the people got to school. The ones that wanted to go to college went to college. And lots of times the girls worked for somebody else in town and stayed in, or the boys maybe walked. I know there was a time when my father was teaching in Southern Oregon. My brother Jack walked every day to high school, which was over on the other side of town at that time. Had to home milk cow and go back to being the orchestra. Fell off the sofa one time. It was a walk and it was true to wet territory. It was mighty dark there between the village place and the Buxton place on the other end. It wasn't much fun to walk. But anyway, by the time you've done that, you did put a little value on learning what was what you wanted to learn. Either you were going to use this education, or you didn't bother to go at all. So you didn't have anybody there that wasn't that easy to learn. I don't think teachers had much trouble with students at that time that weren't really who handled their own education themselves. Anyway, I'm trying to tell you that these WAC people had a lot of grit, and they were fine people. I can't remember any family that, there was a girl that was too. I'm sure of that. I know one family where they were. But the better part of that, if there were numbers in those days, you could hear the horse coming. There was one family that the kids scattered off and hid when the dad was coming, and it wasn't as bad. It wasn't actually so bad. I really think it was a pretty good, it was a good place to live. Yeah. Now at the then we had, besides that, we had the like I said, we had the literary society. Herbert Dool was especially good at in our literary society. He was a real good reader, and they enjoyed him, and he enjoyed it. He came clear from over Groveland. I don't know how he got there, but he came. And then we had the women's club. Now, the Watts Women's Club was always a really a goer. They're still here, but they're not as active as they were then. And these were, along about that time, you see, didn't even have women's rights. But they were getting them mighty fast and wild.
And the, well, I know that to have no shed in the school ground didn't look too good. Mama didn't like the looks of it, and so they asked the fellows to fix it, but they didn't, so they went over and tore it down themselves. You remember where the where that shed was? And well, that was for people to put the horses, some of the kids rode horses. Had one fellow that was really a wild one a lot. He got in a car, and he came, he drove the horse, and Buddy brought his sister. And he came racing down the road. You can remember, can't you? Howard Wall from up home, that way. He was really a daredevil, and he came around the corners where he knew somebody was really coming. And we all stood back and watched. So, I don't remember, but on our corner, we got these guys to come with their cars and put on the brakes and do a cookie out there now. But I don't get a kick out of that, but I used to come get a kick out of Howard Wall with a whole bunch of people in there coming home of, you know, going around as fast as you could. On the homes in Lofts were especially nice in those days. We had some fine homes. They were really nice homes. There were Buxton Place. The Buxton home was a very nice place. And then we had Judge Stevenson. And Judge Stevenson had come from in the Middle West. And his family had come to Lafayette, Oregon, in 1852. And then he came to Watts, I think Dora said, in 1873, and took a bit of land claim there. And he was a judge of the county at one time. He was also a game warden. And he had the home on the hill. He had gathered up various, he had deer, he had Japanese deer, he had coons, and he had various things that was animals and so forth that people could come to see, and it was really a site that people really enjoyed, the places there. Another thing they had at Watts besides dentists, they had smokers. I don't know if everybody knows what a smoker is. But at that time is where they all gathered, fellows gathered, and they boxed. I guess they wrestled too. Mm-hmm. I remember the boxing match. Our girl bloody nose one night. He didn't win. So I remember that night. But those were some of the things they had in Watts too. On 4th of July earlier, we had a corner not far from the school where there were big balm trees, and they had 4th of July celebrations at that time, right there. And so it was quite a busy place. Mr. Holter had a place where he sold things, and my father did too. They were selling the same things, and each one was a little bit put out with the other because when they were each supposed to have bought a right to sell. I don't know if either one of them had or not. But anyway, it was really, the 4th of July were really something there. And at one time, the Army had a group of fellows that came and stayed during the summer, somewhere there in Lofts, and they were there for summer, which made a lot of excitement for
Lofts. They were a survey group.
Is that what they were? Uh-huh. Well, they had boats on the creek down there. And we got to go through with, through that. And then, of course, there was prohibition in Watts. And my mother was president of the WCPU. And they made lots of, they used to sing this song, "You'll have a little still from where I'm made to still let the rest of the world go dry." I think we ought to have it again. And nobody, but I went to the dances at Gale Street, and I went to the dances at Cadenside. I went to the dances everywhere. This was during the time that during prohibition. Nobody asked a foster girl if she wanted a drink. We were safe. They knew my mother, they knew my dad, and I've never had to be tempted to, or anybody to ask me if I wanted a drink. Now let's see, then I want to get anything about Watts. I want to tell you about some of the people that lived in Watts. There was Mr. Prickett, J.B. Prickett, and he had Prickett's Canyon, which was a lovely place. We were all welcome to go. It was a beautiful canyon. He had running water way early because he had he used the little Prickett Creek for his power, and he had what they call a ram. It shot water out somehow or other. He had an upstairs bathroom. It was the first one I ever saw, and I think it was really quite lovely. Then he also had a, out in the dining room, a room that was cut, I don't know what you call it, solarium maybe or something, what do you call it? Anyway, it had glass on the top and all around the sides. And he had lemon tea in there and a lovely thing. And then he had a pond down in front, a handmade pond. And he also had a shop where he had, he did work for people in his shop. He also could make buildings to measurement, you know, the, he could make the plans and so forth, the models. And he modeled a school there. So he had a beautiful place. And which he had done practically by himself. And then we had another place where we spent 4th of July, the things was Roderick Falls. And that was lovely too. But they blasted that. You see why I say the Roderick Falls. They somebody won the law, so there's no longer Roderick Falls there. So Roderick Falls, my husband went once. His friend and his girlfriend was going to go to Roderick Falls. They were going to go on a buggy, and they stowed away in the back end. They didn't get off, they went to Roderick Falls. They weren't popular when they got there. You can't go up Prickett Canyon anymore, on Dale's Peak, now that I'm talking about, Dale's Peak was lovely in those days. The trees were huge, there wasn't any underbrush, just huge ferns and moss. It was lovely. And the stakes were still there where people had staked out claims during the gold. And, you know, everybody was looking for gold in 1840. There were many of those stakes still there. And there is one, I don't know if it's still there or not, there was one place up there that a cave had been dug up into the back of it where they did look for gold. And I understand that there was one, a black man from Hillsborough during the Depression came up there and did manage to make a little money in that getting gold. That was that I was into the cave. I've seen that. Have you, Henry?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's still there or not. I haven't heard. Now the old peak is covered with, they logged it off and the underbrush is all there. It's green again, thank the Lord. But it's not the beautiful place it was because of the underbrush. Sometimes even there's a change across the road because people are worried about people coming. So you used to walk anywhere. It was wonderful to take walks. Now you don't always do that. People are not afraid. The Gale Creek also was used, the creek itself, for logging because during the winter time when the flood was up, and I like flood, I'm in the flood thing, they won't let me go there again, but I still think it's great. During the winter, they had rafted these logs up above us, above Gale Creek, and then during the winter, this was before my time, I never saw them do this, but they sent all these logs in groups down through in rafts to Forsterville and Cornelius, Mr. Holscher's brother. Well, you're all, he had a mill at Cornelius. Some of these logs, I understand, went to that mill there. And so during the winter, and Art's father was active in this. He couldn't swim a stroke, but he used to ride the logs from Gale's Creek down to the mill when the flood was on. When the flood was on, in those days, it was lots of timber that came down along. And where our bridge was, you could hear the stuff hit that bridge and I would just go boom. And My brother was dead on a raft, and once he lost the oar, he was pretty well off. So we had excitement that day, but he managed to get back. But the only harm that the floods ever did, as far as I ever knew, was to kill the gophers and moles. We have less gophers and moles than we have floods.
Now, yes, and called then Charlie Withers was another man of note that I want to talk about that we had in Hawk. And he was a genius. He had worked at this Haynes electric mill, electric power plant, I mean. And then he went over by Gale's Peak, and he built a sawmill there. He knew how to make his own tools. He made the kind of tool that lets you measure how much the steepness of a hill and so forth. And he could do all these various kinds of things that most people have to have a lot of education to do. And when radios came in, he was the first one we knew around that had made himself on his little crystal set. And he had a radio before many people did. He had running water in his house, too. He had taken the creek, he made himself a cement sink in the kitchen. The creek ran right through the kitchen. And he had running water all year. It was cold and it rained. And it was creek. He had running water while the rest of us were still using wells. He had running water. Another thing, for years, another thing he could do that no one could, we had a fire that smoked, fireplace that smoked. It smoked year in and year out. It's especially if the wind was just wrong. My father had sort of a built-out place over the hood. We thought that would stop it. That didn't stop it. Years later, after my father was dead, we had moved into the home place, my husband and I, he was down there one day. I told him, what in the world makes this lame thing smoke? He looked at the thing and said, it's too wide. And he put in a thing back in a ways to make the mouth narrow. The thing stopped smoking. So he knew what he, I don't know how he knew all this kind of stuff, but that was one of our especially smart men and wives. Stop hearing that while I look to see somebody over there. Look at various deeds and so forth here that tell about the first people in Watts, you know, but they're all about in the 1860s because didn't you say, Henry, that if that was some of this time, you said we're too early to be, they had these sort of take off the people, but the records weren't kept until a certain time.
Well, I remember one donation van came was taken out in 54, and they didn't do the deed until 73. So I'm assuming that it probably hadn't been surveyed until about 73. But their claim had been approved, and the fact it had been sold before they even got a deed to it. I don't know if that was pretty much common in this area.
Well, I've been studying abstracts for Hillside, and they evidently sold it, but they didn't record it until when they proved out in the sale, practically.
So they didn't know when that claim was filed on the 27th day of September 1850. They didn't get a date. The lot over the 15th didn't get deep with the lot over the 15th, 1873. But that's 23 years after that the claim was approved.
Yeah.
I think it's
not a
unit problem. I think that's pretty much common. But they had sold it probably long before that, but they were given subject to sale.
Many of these things we have here are just very things that I have talked about. At not the Watt. Mrs. Watt and her husband gave the school the land for the school. They donated that land to be given as long as it was a school. And so we had that until we were consolidated with Forest Grove. So at that time, then we had to buy the land under the building from the heirs after all those years in between, in order to keep our school house, which was now a community home. And the church was used for a community hall later, too. And then now it's a home. And Bill and Alma Holster are living in the church without, you know, the people's off, and they have remodeled quite a bit. But it's quite a bit like it was before, as far as the outside walls and so forth are concerned. So the only thing that's really gone, we still have the buildings where the church was, except it's a house now. We still have the schoolhouse, which is a community club. The only thing we don't have is this building here, which was torn down because it became too old, which was our first dance hall. And the lights at that dance hall were looked like frying pans on the wall. There was some kind of a gas thing, weren't you, Henry?
Burned coal oil in.
Was the coal oil were burned in? You kind of smoked up things, didn't you?
That's
it. Well, anyway, the dances were good. The only thing I mean was, my folks didn't believe it was right to dance on Sunday. Well, people had come a long time, and they brought all kinds of good stuff to eat. They never ate a thing until 1:30, and we had to be home by that time. And I always meant to count a grudge against the folks, because they insisted on us coming. We could go over, but my dad always came after. And quite often he would dance one dance with us before we went home. But I sure need to give up that food. It just wasn't great.
Oh, I forgot about the railroad. At one time he had decided to put a railroad in Watts, and that's in here, and this was Mrs. Holcher's, LaVonna McCoy, was a relative of Mrs. Holcher's, and Mrs. Mrs. Buell, and so they were mentioned, it was their relatives, who were contacted and paid $150 an acre to United Railways for the right-of-way for a railroad through Watts. And it was never paid. But I just wonder if they ever got the $150. I wonder, you know, for anchor. I don't know whether they did. It didn't say here, and it also didn't give a date. But it's in here that this was done. Now, when anybody trying to find about Judge Stevenson here, since we're all characters in Watts, as well as being good people, fine, well-educated and everything, I want to tell you a little bit about Judge Stevenson. Now, he was this one who had he'd been the judge, he'd been the game warden, and he had I would call it a zoo. We called his daughter Cooney because they had coons up there, so Dora was all called Cooney Stevenson when I was a kid. But as he got older, he got to be a little more, all different than other people. He wore his hair long, which is stylish now. Nah. Mm-hmm. But we didn't think it was very much in that day. And he was really he was different, there was no doubt about it, when he got older. And when Art and I were caught during the Depression, we worked up in the logging camps, and they all shut down. We didn't have any money, much. So we built us a little house across from the community hall on my father's place. We figured we could use it for a chicken house or something when the Depression was over. We were used to living in mill shacks anyway, so it looked fine to us, which we did. Art's dad helped him. Art's dad never built anything much except a mill shack. Art never built anything, and Art can't see crooked from straight. But anyway, they were building this building, and this Judge Stevenson came along. He came walking along and came down in there, and he said, well, he said, the building don't look good. He said, I've seen that place full of horse in my day. Oh, I thought it was old Judge Stevenson know about it. Well, it wasn't more than a couple of winters after that we went over one day to see the flooded gas, and then when we got home, my shoes were poking across the floor. But of course, our floors were only one thickness anyhow, so we squished off
we just reached out the water and everything was okay. So when we built onto the house, we built a cement, we raised that part of the house. Judge Stevenson was right. We raised that part of the house. When we added on to it, we put a cement floor, we let it slope a little bit, and we got a hole. So if the water comes in, it goes out. So we're still happy in our house in Juan. We were always going to build a new house. When my folks passed away, we went to their house, and we had it all remarked at first. We thought, well, when things got a little cheaper, we'd build a new house. And never did get any cheaper. So now we decided if we would build a new house, we'd be, have to pay so much taxes, we wouldn't be able to go so much, we wouldn't be able to go places. So we're staying right where we are. And we're happy. But I want to tell you more about Judge Stevenson. Somebody had talked to him one day. He says, yes, my name is Robert Oregon Stevenson. Now let me answer the next question before you ask it. I am not a preacher. I have no patent medicine to sell and have no snakes in my pocket. I have a farm out in the country. What do I raise? I raise plenty. Some fruit on the farm and a lot of H with an L after it, with my neighbors. When I get through with my neighbors, I sometimes attend to my own business. When I'm going to have my hair cut? When am I going to have my hair cut? Now, I don't object to giving out information. When I have it, so I will tell you. Maybe I will have it cut in March and maybe I won't. If I don't get it cut in March, maybe I'll get it cut at some future time and maybe I won't. The story going round that I would not get it cut as long as Meyer is governor is all hooey. Meyer don't count. He is a product of political hysteria. I know a man who has worn the same overcoat for 25 years. He wears his coat long and I wear my hair long. It is his overcoat and my hair, and should not interest anyone but us two. Yes, I was born in Oregon. Mount Hood was some younger than it is now. But in the first place, my folks came across the plains with a covered wagon and ox team, lived in the Willamette Valley for a while, then went to the Puget Sound country, settled at Fort Steligan. Then there was an Indian war. Don't know the cause of the war. Suppose some white man stepped on an Indian's toe. The Indian has his coat of honor, the white man has his coat, and sometimes without any honor. In reading the history of the treatment of the Indian for the first 50 years after the Pilgrims landed, one has to wonder how many crimes were committed in the name of liberty, justice, and Christianity. After the war, we moved back to the valley and settled on Gales Creek. Now, that don't mean Gales City, as we used to call the Gales Creek up further. He means Gales Creek, which was where it was. We were there the hard winter of 61 and 62. There was a great flood in 61. The Willamette River was 10 miles wide in places, did a lot of damage. After the flood, we had a lot of snow. It was 4 feet deep all over this part of the country and stayed on the ground until April. I wish you had this minute. It was very cold. About 1.5 of the livestock died from the cold and the lack of feed. 9/10 of the stock in eastern Oregon died for the same reason. John Whitaker was governor then, and in his Thanksgiving proclamation, he told the people that he had had a great flood and it would have been still greater if it had rained more. Therefore, we should be thankful. But the only thing this last Thanksgiving to be thankful for is that we live in this Oregon country, where there is plenty to eat if we haven't the money to buy. Yes, I am a Democrat, one that always votes for the head of the ticket. No, I don't take the jury. I used to, and I read it as a Christian reads his Bible, or as the Mohammedan looks to the east. But it went off the reservation and supported Meyer at the last election, so I can't trust it anymore. I have very firm opinions on religion, but don't bother anybody with me. Every day I don't have fun. Every day that I don't have fun, I consider it lost. This was one of our Watts men, and there were a lot of others, maybe not just like him, but I like him this way. I think that's fine, and I like what he says. I think even though he does it in a jovial mood, it has lots of sense to it. And I'm proud of Judge Stevenson who lived in Watts, along with all of these other people. And I wish that we could bring Watts back to the place it was. I would like to have Lover's Lane. We had Lover's Lane in Watts. It was a beauty. It started at the Bisbee place, or the Bagby place, there's a little cricket creek follows the road right down through there.
And all along it were white bark trees that I thought were birch when I was a child, but I think they were probably alder. But they had small leaves, and I used to want to, I used to go home. We lived too close to school, but I liked to go walkaways with the kids. But if you walked down through there, when the light shone through, these leaves quivered and everything, and there wasn't any underbrush. Now it's covered with blackberry stuff and all this, and they're digging out rock on Gale's Peak, so now it runs dirty, and it's covered with all this briars and so on. You don't even see the creek. And the fellow that cut all these trees down was a fellow from Canada. Well, he'd been raised in Canada, but he thought he'd like to live in Oregon, so he came and he bought the place there. I don't know what place to call it now. Who lived there when we were? Taylor's. Well, years ago. But that was the place. And he told me, I said, why did you cut those trees? He said, those trees drove me crazy. He said, I come from Canada and I can see for miles in Canada. He said, I thought I couldn't stand it until I cut them. He cut them, but he left. I think he should have been forced to live there for the rest of his life. I would like to have gotten some help to fill off that guy had to live there since he ruined it, because it just didn't do the same thing. Those are the things that we have lost in this great world of all that's coming on for better things. Well, at Rockefeller Hall in 1908, I was telling about they had the Bach Social. And I thought maybe there'd be here more people that would remember some of the people that are mentioned here. But this is the way it went. There were some old women, and what do you think? They lived up on gossip and victuals and drinks. It's little they'd cook for their husbands at all, but they brought big full baskets to Rockefeller Hall. There's Laura, his wife. Aunt Aria and Tabitha too. Tabitha, wasn't she one of your relatives too? Mm-hmm. With baskets all fixed up in yellow and blue. Whatever could be done, they surely have did, to capture some sport or some flashy young kid. Then there's Mrs. Adams and old Lady Frost. Tonight they're all smiles, though at home they're so cross. With such baskets, it surely would dazzle our sights, each hoping to roll in the good brother Sykes. The basket of all that is worth a big price is a fine fabrication by pretty Dame Rice. When the hammer comes down and down come the rocks, she hopes against hope that there'll be Mr. Shocks. Here is Florence and Melissa and Millie and Lily, a fishing for Smalley or Buxton or Dilly. Whichever they get, it'll be nothing lost, but someone tonight is going to get across. There's Ada and Carrie and Julia D. Moss, with baskets well filled up with pie cake and sauce. They'll welcome a bidder with cash plenty handy, a fop full of fashion, a dude, or a dandy. The young girls, too, are in it with sweet winning graces, a laugh in their eyes and a smile on their faces. 'Tis a smile that you've read of that beams nice and soft, the smile that you've heard of that never comes off. They've two baskets here all covered with posies, with violets and lilies and pretty red roses. 'Tis a priceless young pearl, and the fair Frieda Smalley, to capture the ruse and the guise of the ballad. There are dozens of others who have been getting busy, like Alice and Laura, Clara, Maybrick, and Lizzie, making baskets all colors and every design, as square as a die or as round as a dime. From the blackness of Egypt to the whiteness of snow, each bound into determined to catch her abode. Each lad will be right to the front in his racket, with a hand in his cash and an eye on a basket. And when some sweet maid just gives him a wink, he'll raise up his bid while he squeezes his chin. But just when he thinks he's secured his fine prize, a voice will be heard which will open his eyes. A voice from the rear where stands Alan Rice, with a dough in his jeans for raising the prize. When the sale waxes warm and the bidders get hot, Wilson with his silver will be Johnny on the spot, and Adams with his brass will rake in the pot. Oh, why should these ladies rake up such a fuss and rig up these baskets and make such a muss? It is all to buy books for our neighborhood cheer, for the lads and the lassies and children so dear. There'll be books for the babies of fairies and sprites, of Mother Goose and little Dodd Rice, books of hunting and fishing and why they should do so, of Livingston's Travels and Robinson Crusoe. There'll be books for the young folks of love and of war and of poems and of romance and young Lochaber. Our fair country story and the men who have made it, the price it has cost and how they have paid it.
And the, I understand that the, I think they, didn't they make about $75, which is a lot of money? No, were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
You were there. My father.
Well, there's to write that, that's her mother.
Well, see, your mother was mentioned.
But how, was she living in Lawrence at that time?
Well, she could probably, I was thinking that was very far.
She must have been, that must have been before 1960.
Well, no, it had to be after 1960, because she was probably
1960.
What?
She was married in 1960.
Yeah.
I think maybe it might have been before then.
I don't, I think it, like I say, it had to be, I'm sure it had to be after that. But I'm sure he was talking about her.
I thought that was talking about the single girls.
You thought it was talking about what?
The single girls in there.
Oh, but he was talking about all of them. There was Laura Bush, and he mentioned many of them. I've got a picture of Pearl Lily. My father thought she was lovely. And there's a picture of her among her thing. But there were lots of, PNC, Mr. Rice was in town. Lots of people knew Mr. Rice. They mentioned Bud Cooper.
Well, he had one time lived there when Milton Sherman lived now.
Yes, he did. Yeah. And the Adams, of course, did. Yeah. So there were lots of people from off. well, I think probably, I have about said everything, unless somebody's got a hinge. I thought maybe you would be unhappy because I don't come down with a whole bunch of years that we did this or years that we did that. And I went through all of these deeds and everything, and I could come up with a few years of these various things, but those things slipped my mind awfully quick. I like the...
aren't those abstracts?
Yeah, these are the abstracts. Yeah, these are abstracts, and they're very old. Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. In fact, I got these abstracts not too many years ago. It seems like when my father bought the place, made up a whole new deal, and this was very, very old or something. That's because we have the new one. But they called me from Bump's one day after Mr. Bump had died years ago, and they said, well, we've got an abstract that is for your place out there, you know, up to a certain place, and want to know if we liked it, wanted it. So that's how I happened to have it. And of course, I'm real happy to have it. I think probably didn't go back that far with the other things. Now, I know that there's many people in Lawrence who I haven't said anything about that I should have mentioned, probably. Just lots of them, because there were lots of people in Lawrence that should have been mentioned.
Not personally, but when did they start using Ripon Waters as a picnic area? That must have been quite early.
Well, no, that was in my time. That was long about 19. See, Mr. Erickson used that for a rock plant, and he sort of promoted it.
Well, Duke McCurdy started that.
Duke McCurdy did. I didn't remember. I remembered it when. Probably in 1926. Yeah, I think it was more at its peak then. Although we did go before that.
So Jews go to teach.
It was running.
From this is what? From the Watts people who donated the land for the school.
For the what?
For the Watts School.
They were one of the first families.
Yes, they were one of the very first, they were some of the very first families that settled there. Now, there may have been somebody, I would imagine, though, they would have had to have been, otherwise they must have called it something before. The reason it hasn't been written up in the book that so often we read, you know, of all the small, they never got a post office. That's about the only thing Watts never had, was a post office. So I think that's the reason I haven't had more write-ups about it. And they called in one spot in this book, they called it, on Fernside, the mill, the Fernside mill race that said one. So I was surprised they didn't call it Fernside instead of what? Because the Fernside land claim, I think, shows up much more often than anything about what. But the Watts one does show the claim where she got, Mrs. Watts, they got so many acres, half, the north half for Nancy,
and Fernside, and then the south half, you know, was divided to the other ones, so if you get that many acres, or 600 and some acres or something. And, but I don't know why they, as long as I've ever heard anything about it, it has been called rock. Mr. Williams, I was talking about, it was kind of different too. They, when I was a child, they didn't want their mother buried away from home. And so they had built a brick farm type of thing, and their mother was in their own yard. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had their, then somebody kicked up a rumpus and they had to have her moved. And I think that was a silly thing. But, because I thought that was rather nice. They had, but they wanted her there. And I couldn't see what harm was and why people pick up such a rumpus over things that, you know, don't really concern them. I mean, it's wrong. They belong to the Williams also. He had a religion called Moonlight. He didn't think he had to die, Mr. Williams, Charlie's father. He didn't think he had to die. Thought that was really, you only died when you got ready to die. And when he was very old, he was about in his 80s, he fell in the mill and broke his leg. And he wouldn't let it be set. It was broken badly. And I know my father and probably you, many people went and sat at night because he wouldn't have that set. He wouldn't have to do anything to it. And then Charlie Mill made a kind of a swing-like thing so he could turn his father. And all it took him, but the father kept saying, I'm going to walk again. You know, he said, I'll walk again. And he did. It took him a long, long time. But finally, if you would go up there, which my father did because we took our automobile up there to be fixed, they could fix on the building or anybody else. And then when my father died, just the 2 days before, he had been up there working on his automobile. And from his conversation, Mr. Williams knew that my father had no intention of dying. And so on the funeral, at the funeral, which was the congregation of church here, Charlie's father was there. And but he stopped at the coffin and he just stood. He was there a long, long time. Everybody was uneasy in the crowd because he stopped so long. And I keep wondering if he felt that somehow or other that my father was going to give him something, something that he thought maybe could be a help to him in what he'd always believed in. I don't know. Of course, about that. But, of course, there were lots of spiritualists in those days, too. I mean, quite often they'd have meetings around in some of these places. I never attended one, but there were a few people that had the heavy meetings where you sat around the table like now and tried to talk to the people going on before. Wasn't that it? Did you ever attend any of those? You knew they had one, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, that was interesting too. I'm sorry for taking up your time for so long, folks. If I get started on once, I can't quit.
Which is the house there that was the church?
It's as you go towards Gales Creek, you know, as you're going up towards Gales Creek, it's the very, you know where the community hall is?
Yeah.
It's right beside the community hall. As you look towards the community hall, it would be on the right.
It's not out where you see it very much from the road.
No, you can't, because there's quite a bit of brush there. Uh-huh. And I have a picture here that shows a little bit of a steeple somewhere. I think I did. I thought about one. Yeah, I have pictures of inside the school and outside the school. And Irene brought a picture of Miss, her name was Miss Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Miss Hamilton was one of our three-year teachers. I had her when I was in the first grade. She dressed beautifully, as you will be able to see by her picture. And when she walked, her fingernails looked like drops of water. She wore such long fingernails. I was fascinated because she walked her fingernails. And her clothes were good. This teacher was Mary Hamilton, not Mary Hamilton, but this was Mary Hamilton. And she wore these skirts that were kind of wide at the top and came in small and were split up the side. And she was a beauty too. And I didn't go to school yet. I ran away one day But they came and got me. I went to school. My sister is sitting here somewhere. Evangeline was in school. But my dad, they were clearing the land over across from the school. And I'd gone over, my brother was over there. And so I went over there and I was just sitting on the post. The boy looked pretty good to me over at the school. And first thing I knew, when I got into school, I let me in and everything. And here came my mother in the back door. My mother quite often wore a man's hat. She looked great in a man's hat. And so here came my mother. She stood real straight. And gosh, I was really, didn't know what was going to happen to me. She never did anything at all. She just said, come on, Layla, it's time to go home. So that was my first education, was just that little time at the that I sneaked away. Instead of running away from school, you know, like playing hooky, I went. So, however, I may have started the earliest and gone the earliest, but I was the only one in my family that had the least education. See? I never attended the city university, y'all. I've just got to get along and I'm not there. Well, I'll put on the yes.
I just wondered how Rockefeller called that.
Henry and I have been wondering. We don't know. We wonder how in the world they called it Rockefeller Hall.
It was there far back as I can remember.
Yeah, that's different. And I don't even remember it. I just had the phone. I really don't remember.
I don't know where the building was.
Yeah. Henry knows where the building is. And I've been to feel terrible because I want there to be a cement marker where the grist mill was and the mill and the mill was. I think it should be remembered. I think it's a too bad that one of the very first grist mills in Washington County has no marker, nothing to say what was ever there. I can't get the people in Watts that live there not interested at all. I have tried to. Every time they suggest something for the city of Forest Grove, I wrote it down. I said, when are we going to get a marker for this Watts stone? But the longer I live, the less Watts people are left. There's just Henry and I and well, there are some more. But they're more interesting. They're not as many people as
there's too many living there.
No, they're not.
They'd rather watch TV.
Maybe so, yeah. But I thought, on Ewing Young's place over there, they have that, when you go past Ewing Young's place over by Newburgh, where there's a cement place, cement stone, with just a marker on it, telling it's Ewing Young. I can't cost too much, I don't think. And so I had hoped that someday I could get people interested. But so far, I haven't. Well, thanks for all your listening, folks.
Did the Williamses have a sawmill at Thatcher? Is that the same Williams?
No, I don't think so. Because these Williams had come to the Watts in order to work at the Haynes mill. Another interesting thing, and so they stayed there. And they didn't want. And really, they built the mill, but they weren't interested in cutting any wood with this mill. They didn't cut very much lumber. You went up there to catch a little lumber. But they had these lovely trees, and they couldn't bear to cut down these trees, and they're just my type of people. I've got the telephone line came to Watts in 1904. It was divided in two parts. The vine line with people on the hill, the bootleggers and the grape raisers. I don't really mean that. I'm sorry. And then the west line was us lowlanders. The lowlanders were on the west line. And if anything happened, it was great. You rang the phone and a whole lot of sharp rings if wanted something to happen. And the time that some guy hit Herbert Duell over the head with a hammer and the guy hit up over the hill, that day we got all these short rings. And so everybody went up over there and Herbert, this fellow had gone clear over the hill in Scotty's Valley. So I don't know if they ever found him or not.
Really?
They found him. Nobody ever found why he hit Herbert. And he was milking a cow that morning, or Herb was milking the cow. And that guy came along with a hammer, and he was a hired man, and he socked him on the head several times, I guess. So the old phone began to ring, and everybody was all on their feet. He was really quite a thing, you know? That was a little more excitement than once, I guess.
Yeah, well, a phone book there.
But, now, I've got the records here. Funny part was, in 1904, you see, they started this phone, and it tells here, the Bisbee and the everybody, it tells how big your, every guy had to do so much work and furnish a pole or two. And so it tells us all this, and it's really quite interesting. I was going to throw this away once. They started this in 1904, and the secretaries, and when you get to the one that you can't hardly read over here, that office the secretary. This, I think, was about 1924 or something, but, there's some beautiful items if you go through here. But, over here, it was 1949 before we got rid of that telephone line. We had that long time. Yeah, that was quite interesting. Gee, Art Maitland paid $10, Bernard Larson $11, Walter Dilling $9. No, we paid them for work done on the line. Oh my gosh, but they were, there's just very, it's really a very interesting thing, and I've kept it. My father had been the secretary, and I think 30 years later, I was fine at the very end, but it was started in 1904, and all the records are here. So
that was a mutual telephone company?
It was our, the farmer's line, Dick Holcher is mentioned here a lot of times, you know. Buxton was, this man was really a good writer here. You know,
I found a book yesterday on how to set one of these up. It's printed in 1911. Wish I'd known.
Was Mrs. Frick named Melissa?
Yeah, Melissa Frick. Yeah, it was Melissa Frick.
She used to play with me when I was a kid.
Oh, did she really? Yeah. She had little curls. Her hair was a little curly. She always had these cute little curls on the neck. I thought that was really She was Mr. Stevenson's first wife was Cora Greenin, and she was a bug. But here's pictures of people at law school. Here's the good-looking teacher.
Henry, that teacher is long hair.
Yeah, they want to hear that.